Our Humvee rolled to a stop just behind one of the Abrams tanks, its huge main gun pointed directly at a building and ready to engage. Pushing open the heavy armor door to my vehicle, I stepped out onto the street. I had a gut feeling something was wrong. Running into the Marine gunny sergeant, I asked him, "What's going on?" "Enemy in the building right there, putting up a serious fight." He pointed to the building across the street, his weapon trained in the direction. "They killed one of our Iraqi soldiers when we entered the building and wounded a few more. We've been hammering them, and I'm working to get some bombs dropped on them now." He was in the midst of coordinating an airstrike with U.S. aircraft overhead to wipe out enemy fighters holed up inside the building. I looked around. The building he pointed at was riddled with bullet holes. The Humvee had put over 150 rounds from a 50 caliber heavy machine gun into it, and many more small caliber rounds from their rifles and light machine guns. Now the Abrams tank had a huge main gun trained on the building, perhaps preparing to reduce it to rubble and kill everyone inside. But something didn't add up. We were extremely close to where one of our SEAL sniper teams was supposed to be. In the mayhem, they hadn't reported their exact location, and I knew there would be it would be close to the point where we were standing, close to the building the Marine gunny had just pointed to. No other friendly forces were to have entered this sector until we properly deconflicted, determined the exact position of our SEAL sniper team, and passed the information to other friendly units in the operation. "Hold what you got, gunny. I'm going to check it out." He looked at me as if I were completely crazy. His Marines and a full platoon of Iraqi soldiers had been engaged in a vicious firefight with the enemy fighters inside and couldn't dislodge them. Whoever they were, they had put up one hell of a fight. We moved across the street towards the enemy-infested house. I kicked the door open only to find I was staring at one of my SEAL platoon chiefs. He stared back at me with eyes wide surprise. "What happened?" I had asked him. "Enemy had entered the compound. We shot one of them. They attacked hardcore. They brought it." And then I remembered what the gunny had just told me. One of their Iraqi soldiers had been shot when they entered the compound. At that moment, it all became clear. In the chaos, our SEAL snipers had engaged the man with the AK-47, thinking they were under attack. Then all hell broke loose. They called in for reinforcements, and the Marines and Army troops responded with a vicious barrage of gunfire into the house they assumed was occupied by enemy fighters. Meanwhile, inside of our house, our SEALs were pinned down, unable to clearly identify that it was friendlies shooting at them. All they could do was return fire. As I walked back out into the Marine chief, it was a blue on blue, I said again, calmly and as a matter of fact. There was no time to debate or discuss. There were real bad guys out there. One of my guys wounded, but everyone else was okay by a miracle. But we still had work to do and to drive on. The operation continued. The rest of the mission was a success, but it didn't matter. I felt sick. One of my men was wounded, an Iraqi soldier was dead, and others were wounded. We did it to ourselves, and it happened under my command. Morning, everybody. And if you're wondering why you're hearing a different voice, my name is John Seago. I'm the head athletic trainer for Bloomfield Hills High School in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. And for the month of October, I will be your host as we investigate traits and characteristics that have shaped leaders and, as author and podcaster Tim Ferriss says, deconstruct those habits and explore how we can become better leaders in our profession of athletic training and sports medicine. What you've just heard is the opening of the book, Extreme Ownership, How U.S. Navy SEALs Lead and Win. Good morning, Jeremy.
Morning, John.
So back in January, when we recorded podcast 432, I continuously referred back to this book. And not only that, but the weeks preceding it, too. This was a book I continuously looked at, I studied, read over. After we recorded that, Jeremy had asked if I'd be willing to lead a series on leadership traits in athletic training, and I was happy that he had asked me, and I agreed to it. So for today, in this part of the series, we are going to go over the book that I just mentioned, Extreme Ownership, How U.S. Navy SEALs Lead and Win, and talk about how the traits in this book can help benefit athletic trainers and our profession overall. So what is extreme ownership? So I'm going to go back to the book in true Jocko fashion and discuss a little bit more. And this is right from the book. When we completed the last mission of the day, I went on to the operations center where I had my field computer set up to receive emails from higher headquarters. My email inbox was full. Word had rapidly spread that we had a blue on blue. I opened an email from my commanding officer and it read, "Shut it down. Conduct no more operations. Investigating officer and I are en route." Frustrated and angry and disappointed that what had just happened, I began to gather information. As we debriefed, it was obvious that there were some serious mistakes made by many individuals both during the planning phase and on the battlefield during execution. Plans were altered, but notifications weren't sent. The communication plan was ambiguous and confusing about specific timing of radio procedures contributed to critical failures. Within my SEAL troop, mistakes had been made. The specific location of the sniper team in question had not passed down to other units. A thorough situation report had not been passed to me after the initial engagement took place. The list of mistakes was substantial, but something was missing. There was a problem, some piece that I hadn't identified, and it made me feel like the truth wasn't coming out. Who was to blame? I reviewed my brief again and again, trying to figure out the missing piece, the single point of failure. I looked through my notes again, trying to place blame. Then it hit me. Despite all the failures of the individuals, units, leaders, and despite the myriad of mistakes that had been made, there was only one person to blame for everything that had gone wrong in the operation. It was me. I was responsible for everything in Task Unit Bruiser. I had to take complete ownership of what went wrong. And that's what a leader does, even if it means getting fired. A few minutes later, I walked into the platoon space where everyone was gathered for the debrief. I stood before the group. Whose fault is this? I asked the room full of my teammates. After a few moments of silence, the SEAL who had mistakenly engaged the Iraqi soldier spoke up. It was my fault. I should have positively identified my target. No, I responded. It was my fault, said a radio man. Wrong, I responded. It was my fault, said another SEAL. Negative, I said. You're not to blame. You know whose fault this is? You know who gets all the blame for this? There's only one person to blame for this, me. I am the commander. I am responsible for the entire operation. It was a heavy burden to bear, but it was absolutely true. I was the leader. I was in charge, and I was responsible. Thus, I had to take ownership of everything that went wrong. The leader is truly the ultimate, is truly and ultimately responsible for everything. That is extreme ownership, the fundamental core of what constitutes an effective leader in the SEAL teams and any leadership endeavor. So that's part of the book, the first chapter of the book. And, you know, Jeremy, I'm happy enough to buy the book for, and he was kind of got after a little bit and purchased the audio book. And how many times have you read the book now?
Well, I listened to the audio book twice already. So, and then I've gone through the book once.
Okay. Yeah. So this is a book, for me, I purchased back in 2015. I think right when it came out, I was lucky enough to find it, or the book found me almost. And, to be quite fair and honest, it took a long time for me to actually read the book or to get it going. I was reading it, and for me, I was having more problems with, I think, the ego around it. You know, how can I take ownership of certain situations in my life and in my profession? And it was hard to wrap my head around, like, how do I really use this in my life? And maybe sometimes I even thought, like, I don't need this stuff. So it took a long time for me to actually get going in the book. And then eventually I had to sit down and, in a way, I just said, I need to finish this book just to finish it. Like, I need to get this off my shelf. And then I poured myself into it. And a lot of the things that we will talk about today and this book have changed a lot of the things that I do in my profession and in my personal life. You know, you don't always need to have the leadership title. And I think many of us in our profession don't necessarily have that title. We're not always the head, or we're not always you know, classified as a leader, but it doesn't really take that to be a leader. And this book really, for me, gives you a lot of the principles and a lot of things that you can use in your day-to-day life to help become a better leader as you go on about those things. So, Jeremy, were there any things that you want to read from chapter one, or that you feel that you'd like to touch on?
Well, I do have some highlights that are in the principle section that I'll mm-hmm. kind of go over towards the end, but just as you were talking about extreme ownership, that's exactly what it is. So for me, the most important thing for me, honestly, like, is my relationship with God, and then my relationship with my wife and my kids. And then after that comes my professional life and things, you know, with athletic training. And so for me, that's really where it starts, is am I leading at home? Because if I can take care of that, I can take care of the rest of the stuff. And honestly, there's times where I get home at, you know, 10 o'clock at night after a game or whatever, and I look at the floor that's messy, the kitchen that is not clean, and I get upset with my wife or with my kids. And, you know, I want to just start throwing toys away because, well, obviously you can't clean them up, so you guys don't deserve to keep them. Or, you know, why are you not cleaning the dishes? That kind of thing. And so it really has to come back to me, where me as the leader, I have to be responsible for that. Like, I have to communicate clearly, hey, baby, it's really important to me that the dishes are done. And then it's also important that I understand the situation, because it may be that instead of washing dishes, she was taking care of our kid that was sick, or that she was reading a book about how to take care of the adopted kids that we're expecting, or, you know, she's doing something else. Instead of just assuming the worst, I have to step back and look at the situation as a whole. Did I look at everything in the big picture? Did I understand that? Did I make sure everybody understood the commander's intent, which we'll talk about in there, or is part of, you know, the Extreme Ownership book? There's just so much in there, like, that I can blame other people.
Right.
But instead of blaming my kids, my wife, the dog, the neighbors for playing their music loud at 10 o'clock or whatever it is, I had to stop and look at my situation. What am I doing? What am I doing to fix this, to correct it, to make it better, to be responsible? Am I the one that's choosing to turn the alarm off in the morning and not go run, and then I feel cruddy the rest of the day, that kind of things? And so for me, the biggest thing is starting at home. But then I also mentioned it, like, in a Facebook post, with this extreme ownership. I was lazy last year for here at the, as far as my student program, I was lazy, and in the student program was pretty, it was pretty, they were pretty lazy. They were inconsistent. They didn't really do their job. And a lot of kids didn't know how to do the minimum things. And again, that's me, right? Before, I was blaming my coworker, because, hey, Bill wasn't doing his job. You know, he wasn't taking care of the kids. He wasn't doing meeting the standard, which wasn't communicated or wasn't agreed upon, that kind of thing. It wasn't made clear what the intent was. Or, you know, well, the parents keep calling them away, or the kids get a job, or they're just not showing up. Well, again, that comes back to me. That's my fault. I have to take responsibility. I have to look at what I'm not doing correctly, what I'm not doing well. And then, again, as we talk about leading up and down the chain and making the commander's intent understood, that's what it is. So at the beginning of the year, we set the expectations, which are the exact same expectations we had last year. We just went over them individually, and I'd say, hey, how are you meeting these? So each week I've asked them, you know, before our varsity games, we usually have a food together. And so a lot of times I'll go get the food. And then as they'll come in and to get it, what I've been doing recently is saying, all right, individually, so Nick, how are you meeting these expectations, these kind of four areas that we've been focusing on? Or I'll say, you know, what are you doing to improve? How are you doing this? And then throughout the game, hey, Juan, this is how I want the game. This is how I want the field set up. Okay, so here's why I want it set up like this. I want our stuff separate from football stuff. I want our stuff away from the water so that it doesn't get wet. Again, going back and recoaching and mentoring those people that are not meeting that expectation.
Right.
So being willing to go back and continue to coach and coach and coach. And that's one of the highlights that I know that I have down there, is you got to be willing to mentor and reteach those things over and over again. Or if it comes to a point to where they won't learn, won't do, then you have to be willing to cut them loose, which is also a situation. We set this expectation. We had a senior who had been in trouble, ended up going to, like, had legal trouble. And then that senior realized, hey, I can't meet these expectations. I'm going to just take care of my academic stuff. I'm going to see you guys later. And right. Just this week, we had another senior, questionable loyalty kind of thing, and is just like, I got other stuff going on, I'm gone. Well, what that does is it frees up the team to move forward and removes the least effective or least efficient parts of our sports medicine team here at the school, and makes them move forward. So now they're not like, oh, well, that kid doesn't show up, doesn't do what they're supposed to, and, you know, Jackson still keeps him around, but now I don't, because we've had the expectations, we continued that conversation, and rather than just letting it go, we say, look, this is the expectation, this is what we're doing, we need you to get with it or get on. And so
right.
There's a lot to it that I kind of need to continue to go back. And as I'm just now listening to the second book, Dichotomy, there's things that I'm going to be able to pick up there. And obviously through this whole month, I'm going to pick up a lot. But like what you said, we had that conversation back in January of last year about leadership. And then there's so many times where I have this conversation and then I just move on, because as the host of the podcast, that's what I have to do. I have to have the conversation. I have to go edit it. I have to prepare the website, the post, the social media post. And so I, a lot of times, don't process it. I just have it and go. And so this is really a cool opportunity for me. I'm super proud of what you're doing. You got lots of guests lined up. You've done a lot of work, and this is actually the most homework I've ever done for any of the podcasts. So John, I appreciate the effort and the commitment you put into building leadership in athletic training, and I look forward to where we're going.
Yeah, I appreciate you asking to post this. And I think, you know, we'll talk about the book in a few seconds, but I, you know, for me, it's, you know, going through this book and creating that standard and taking control of the things that are happening that I can control of in my life. You know, there's days, how many days do you not have enough time? Like you're rushing to get into work, or you're behind because you forgot to do one thing and you're not taking care of one thing after the other. And it just kind of snowballs into a really bad day when it could really just start first thing in the morning. And that's one of the things that I learned from the book too, is just taking control, like you just mentioned. You know, it's the book itself. I think when I first purchased the book, I thought, hey, this is going to be a really cool book about Navy SEALs. And, you know, they're going to talk about battles and gunfights. And I know I just touched on that big scene in the beginning of the book. But realistically, the way the book is highlighted and laid out, they give a little scene, a scenario. They'll tell you about an event that may have happened in Ramadi. And this is the platoon took was in Ramadi in 2006, attached with Marines and an army to help take back over the city. And they'll touch on those things. They'll also touch on the way this the company is for them. They work in leadership consulting as well. So they'll talk a little bit about you know, different scenarios that they've run into, and then they will talk about the principle. So what's the principle on how to go about that scenario? And the first one is the extreme ownership and how to take control and be a better leader. And then they talk about application. So the first book is really written towards business. But I really found for me being in the athletic wing and being in there in our profession, everything really tends to be a little bit more amplified. How many times do we ever deal with an injury, and that's the only thing we have to deal with, and we're able to take time with it? And I mean, it's maybe less than 10% of the time do we actually deal with something like that. Almost always we're dealing with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 things that are in a row. You know, in my situation, I'm lucky enough to have interns and to have people working with me, but there's almost never a time where we're always just dealing with one thing at the same time. We're always dealing with multiple things. So if we're able to put down standards and practice those standards over and over and over, you know, the outcome is really, it's better for us as athletic trainers, but it's also better for our student athletes. And that's really the big common goal that we always continue to go back to. So
in that, you talked about the book, it has the application to business, but yes, that's actually possibly my favorite part. I don't know, because listening to the audiobook is awesome, because you hear those guys reading it in their voice, and you know, you hear the grittiness that's inside that, and you're imagining a Navy SEAL as they're telling you the story, and you can feel the emotion in their voice. So I absolutely love the Audible audiobook. So I would recommend anybody checking that out. Again, for me, I was listening to it, and then I read through it, and because then you can hear their voice and you get more of the feeling there. But the application to business is the real good part to me, because it gives you some background, it gives you the principle that you're working off of, and then, hey, here's how we applied this. This is what it looks like in real life. And then that's easy to translate. Whenever he's talking about extreme ownership, I think he was talking about there was a CEO that was, or CTO, chief technical officers. I don't know, the stories are getting confused, but someone that was saying that this is the problem, but he wouldn't own up to it. Once he finally did, then they started working together well, and they made efficiency. And so again, the application to business doesn't just mean business, but application to any sort of, I guess, working system or life or process. And that's, for me, that's how I learn better, is how does this really apply? How does this really fit, rather than just some concept? And so again, I don't think any part of the book is unnecessary or doesn't fit with what we're talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think what it does for me, and what I've really learned, is that it's taught me how to think, not what to think. And that's been a constant thing that I will continuously think, or I'll work with my interns. you know, we come out and we are, you know, a lot of the curriculum, kids are coming out and knowing what to think. But then when things go wrong, they don't really know how to apply those things. They don't know how to think. And there's a big difference there. And I found that a lot of these books that we're going to cover this month and a lot of the different traits are awesome. And they're great because they teach you how to think and how to react in different situations. The amount of situations we deal with and the vast array of situations that we deal with in our profession, you really need to have an understanding of how to do those things. Because almost never in our profession are things cut and dry and linear. They are mass chaos, all, you know, a lot of times. So, you know, a book like this, and like I said, the books that we're going to cover throughout the rest of the month, hopefully will give athletic trainers a basis of learning how to think through different chaotic scenarios and situations. So not to belabor the point on the first chapter. I know when I sat down to write these notes, I wrote notes on every single chapter. There's, I believe, 12 chapters in the initial first book. Mm-hmm. And then I realized if I write down notes on every single chapter, this is going to be like a 10-hour podcast. And we might as well just read the book to everybody. So I really implore every athletic trainer. This is a book that I suggest to almost everybody I talk to, especially athletic trainers. There hasn't been a week where my intern's dealing with something or somebody's dealing with something, and I say, hey, you got to read this book. I'll hand them a chapter and just look at the things that I've highlighted. How does that apply to this situation? How can you deal with the situation with this principle? And then we'll talk through it. Obviously, I won't just hand the book and walk away from somebody. But, you know, so I want to move on. I know, Jeremy, you had a chapter you wanted to talk about. We're only going to touch on about four chapters today. And hopefully that puts the bug in people's ear. This is a book that they would like to look after and read through.
So the next chapter is chapter 2. It says there are no bad teams, only bad leaders. And Obviously that feeds right into, you can't really say that I'm the reason it's bad if you're not owning the circumstances and situations. And so if you get chapter 1 saying that a leader has to own everything, then you can get chapter 2, which is say there are no bad teams, only bad leaders. And they go on, they tell a story. Again, I don't want to ruin it, but it really is just a story of there's two teams. One's really good. One's really bad, right? So you got like what, the Patriots and the Browns. Is that about right? So then it's basically switching like Tom Brady to the Cleveland Browns and the quarterback over there to the Patriots, whoever their quarterback is. And then the Patriots still doing really well, and then the Browns also doing really well. So you're taking a team that was very, very underperforming, and because you're changing the leader, you're changing the outcome. And so there was nothing wrong with the team. It was something wrong with the leader. And again, if you get chapter 1, that as a leader, you have to be responsible for everything. You can't blame your principal. You can't blame admin. You can't blame the counselors. You can't blame the parents. You can't blame the students not coming in for rehab, right? You just have to own the situation, take care of it, go work up and down both sides of it, and then go from there. But you have to own that situation and then know that there are no bad teams, that there are only bad leaders. So again, with me, this starts at home, right? And so in the marriage relationship, you know, it's not just a level, right? We're just coasting along all the time. But in our marriage, there's highs, there's lows. There's, like I just said before, there's times where I'm upset with my beautiful wife that I love, and I'll tell anybody that she didn't do the dishes, that she didn't, I don't know, whatever it is, vacuum the floors, right? But at the same time, I didn't mow the yard, or I didn't fix the door that's fallen off the hinge because, you know, I just haven't done it yet, or I haven't put this stuff up yet. And so if I look at that as a team, again, I'm not saying my family is a corporation, but as the leader of that family unit, as that team, if I want them to produce efficient results, if I want my boys to grow up to be good men, not right. Mm-hmm. I don't want them to be good boys. I want them to be good men. If I want my wife to be a godly, encouraging woman, then I need to lead her in that direction. And so it's really all on me. If I can't lead them, then it's my fault. It's my fault, not theirs, right? Because I'm not giving them the encouragement they need, the opportunities they need, the mentoring, the reinforcement they need. So I have to go back and look at that at home. And again, coming here to the school, again, I can blame, like I said, other people. I can blame anybody. But if I own that, if I know that I am tolerating somebody skipping practice, I'm tolerating kids failing, I am tolerating kids not coming in dress code, then that is my leadership, right? If I am saying, guys, this is what we expect. I understand some of you are new. This is your first, second week, third week, and you might not have all, you know, you might not have enough clothes to wear to every day of practice. So I want you in a school appropriate shirt until we can get everybody enough t-shirts, right? I want you in, you know, black shorts or black bottoms, because that's what we expect. You need to be wearing tennis shoes, not sandals. You know, understand that we're at football practice. It's been raining for two straight weeks here in Pasadena. It's going to be muddy. Plan appropriately. Encourage them. Continue to encourage them. Don't allow them to just continually slip by. I'm not perfect. There was a couple kids yesterday that were out of dress code, but I remembered, because we're doing the podcast today, that I said that, hey, we need to make sure we're wearing black bottoms and not jeans, right? Hey, you know, you have to leave early. Okay. You know what we expect. You know that today doesn't count then as one of your days worked, whatever. You need to come on another day. This is what we expect. It was laid out. This is what we agreed upon in the beginning. And so if I continue to reinforce the expectations, making it simple, saying these are it, I'm not expecting you to be a college level athletic training student or a professional. These are the minimum standards that I expect, and we're going to continue to grow from there. Then they understand that. And that's kind of what weeds out some of those other kids, like I mentioned, is because I'm holding those expectations and those standards. And that, this past Friday night or Saturday night at the varsity football game, it was, like I said, almost perfect. I ride with one of the coaches and help him get some of the equipment out. So I get there, and then I unload his truck. The kids get there on the bus. They unload the bus. They fill up the coolers. They set up the locker room. They do the taping in the locker room. They set up the sidelines. They fill up the coolers, the bottles. Like, literally, there was nothing I had to do before the game to prepare. Oh, I had to go get. I had to give them the water key to turn on the water, and then. During the game, the only thing I had to take care of were things that only I can take care of. When there's an injured player on the field, I took care of it. But if there was a cut, the kids didn't even come to me. The athletes didn't even come to me. They went straight to my students because they can handle all the first aid stuff. They can tape the fingers, the wrists, the hands, or they can cover the wounds. And again, that doesn't come from an accident, right? That's because we're setting that expectation, but also, as you're going to be talking about, like leading up and down the chain and empowering junior leaders, and there's so much stuff in this book that when you put it all together, that you realize that do step one, just take ownership. And then the other things will fall in line as you continue to practice that.
Yeah, one of the things you had mentioned right there, and I know you've said it in the past, it's setting the standard. What is the minimum standard for what you expect? And one of the lines that I love in this book, and I know you've stated it before, is you promote what you preach. Right. So if you're constantly letting things go, if you're setting a low standard and things aren't being met, then you have to be happy and you have to be okay with the outcome of those things. So if you have a really low standard, if like for you, if you want your students or if you don't care what they're wearing, and then 2 days later you realize, you know, a girl or a guy are wearing something that is, you know, inappropriate, you know, you can only be mad at yourself because you didn't set the standard high, you know? And you also have to have a reason why you're setting standards too. I mean, if you're going to set a standard that everybody has to wear a suit and tie, well, why, right? The standard has to have a reason behind it too. You know, I set a standard this year too with my interns that we have a dress code, and we'll set the dress code and we talk about it. You know, it's, you know, normally the last couple of weeks in Michigan, it's been a little bit nicer, starting to get a little bit colder, but we'll always go for home games. We're going to wear black tops, khaki pants. And I said, the reason we're going to wear that color and not gray or not purple, those are our colors, is because our home team jerseys are purple. And if I can't look down the sidelines and correctly identify my staff or my team, I don't like that. And that's not a standard I want to fall below, because I want to be able to look down and see where my intern is or see where my assistant is in case I need to get a hold of them. What if the radio is not working? What if it's a loud crowd and I can't get their attention? you know, or I'm looking for them. I shouldn't have to do that because then we're wasting time. So setting that standard has been a good thing too. And it just creates more and more efficiency. So, you know, if you're setting that standard high and you're maintaining it, your outcome is going to be great. And I saw your post this past weekend about your students, and I was so proud of you. And I was so happy. Like, I saw that. I'm like, yes, that's exactly it. Like, you took ownership of it. You set the standard with your staff and with your team. And then everything else just kind of melts away and falls into place. So when those chaotic things happen, when all hell breaks loose, your priority becomes very simple and very clear, and you can deal with certain things. So if you're worried about, if you're looking down the sideline and you're pissed off that one of your staff is wearing a different color polo than we had talked about, and then it starts eating away at you. And then something happens and a student walks away, or, you know, you have to deal with a blood issue that's really simple, and then somebody tears an ACL on the field while you're still maintaining, you know, this issue with putting on a Band-Aid, you get upset with people. It's because you haven't set the standard. You haven't set the minimum standard, or you haven't set the priorities with your staff. And that is the basis behind that chapter is, you know, you have to be a good leader for your team to be really good. And I think if you look personally at probably where you're at last year, you know, like you had said, you were upset with kids, you weren't maintaining a standard. And then you fast forward to that Saturday night, and to have that pride, like the more you do that, the more efficient and more better you are at your job and doing the little things and the big things that we need to take care of. And that for me is awesome when I see other athletic trainers that are doing that, and people who are in a profession who will take and set good standards. And if you're not, you know, we'll talk about this chapter a little bit later. There's times where you don't set a standard and you become frustrated with other people. And one of the things that I had to learn to do was set a standard of telling my coaches, you can't schedule games 2 days before. You can't just add on something on the schedule and expect me to be there. I would get upset with them, but it's because I didn't take ownership and I didn't explain why I was upset with them. I would just get frustrated. And I think that's probably one of the biggest things athletic trainers, if we look on the secondary schools page on Facebook, you're going to see almost every week, you know, that's probably a low estimate, but every week somebody's going to post, God, my coach added a game, and what do I expect to do? What do you expect me to do? And, you know, they end up covering it. Well, that's the standard you're setting. You're going to do it, which we're almost always going to do. We need to let people know, like, why we don't want to be there, or why we can't be there, really. You know, we shouldn't be expected to work 7-8 days a week. You know, we need time off. We need time with our families. We need time away. You know, because if we keep doing certain things, our standard and our practice is going to fall and fall and fall. And then we're not going to be able to deal with the big issue, or you're going to burn out. Right. So yeah, absolutely. There are no bad teams. There are only bad leaders. And I love that comment right there.
Probably the last thing on this is the Facebook post that I made was about the kids. It wasn't about me. It was about them. And so also in the book, Jocko or Leif, they talk about the praise goes to the team, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't go to me as the leader. It's because they believed in what we were doing. They did it, and they deserve that praise and recognition. And so it's really what it's about is leading them to do well and then applauding them for just saying, hey, you guys did great. And I did. I intentionally said before everybody leaves tonight, hey, I want to make sure that I tell y'all thank you, that I say you did a phenomenal job, that it couldn't have gone any better tonight. The only way it could have was if I didn't have to go on the field at all because of injuries.
Right.
And so you guys did fantastic. And that's why I did that post, is just because I was so proud of what they had done. And so again, you're working on creating this environment. Make sure that those people know when they've done well, reinforce the positives. And so again, that's for me, not something that's super easy. It's easy for me to say, you need to fix this. But instead I had to step back, take that moment and say, you guys did amazing. And so next time they're going to look to repeat that because mm-hmm. they know that they met that expectation and they know that they met that standard and that they got praise for it. And so it's really none of the book can stand apart, but like every single chapter kind of needs to be dealt with. Like, yeah, almost like you have to learn each lesson individually and then kind of put them back together and then read it again and put them back together and read them again. So I know you're going to talk about prioritize and execute. And so you mentioned that briefly earlier, like if somebody's injured and I'm having to deal with this, so I can't prioritize what that is. So why don't you take us away on prioritize and execute?
Yeah, real quick, I think a mark of a good leader is somebody who has humility. And you just showed that right there. You know, like it's not about you. It's about the team and it's about everybody else. So, you know, if you're able to pull that out of this book and pull this out of this month, you know, having humility throughout what we do is a major trait that I think leaders exemplify. So I applaud you, and I know you're too humble to accept it, but you know, I just want to point that out again. So the next chapter I want to talk about, which I think athletic trainers would really benefit from, is the chapter called Prioritize and Execute. I was lucky enough to go to Roll Call, which was the Leadership and Dynamic Situations conference that Echelon Front, who is the company that Jocko and Leif run, they put on in Dallas 2 weeks ago. This is one of the laws of combat. They have four laws of combat, and this is one of them. It's prioritize and execute. And I really, when I read through this book, like you said, every chapter, it's like, wow, I need to practice this. And this is a great thing, you know, and you have to go through and really explore it. You know, when I read through this book, when I read through this chapter, it really showed me where I'm kind of lacking in certain things. Where do I need to prioritize my time? Where do I need to prioritize my efforts and then execute them as they go along? What is the most important thing to cover? What is the next important thing? What's the least important thing? And what can I attack tomorrow or the next day? You know, when we talk about this, you know, the book really talks about a scene where kind of all hell breaks loose. And they're dealing with certain, you know, people kind of going all over the place. And really, I've kind of gone back and forth. Do I want to read some of the book? Do I not? You know, I'll touch on a little bit what I heard at Roll Call. You know, and one of the people who work for Echelon Front, his name's Mike Sorelli. He walked up onto the stage and he talked about a scenario where it was him and three other SEALs were on a rooftop and somebody had thrown a grenade up there. He was hit. He was in charge of that small platoon. And it was mass chaos where he had taken shrapnel in his hip. He was in a lot of pain. They knew that they were going to lose one of their other teammates. And then the two other guys and the radio was already out. So talk about mass chaos where, you know, you're losing a team member, you're injured in a lot of pain. You are another guy that's, as he put it, combat ineffective. And then the only way to get word out to the other SEALs and the other people he was with is now gone. So the radio is now gone. So what did he have to do? You know, he talked about stepping back, and it's something that they talk about in the book called detach yourself from a situation, but really breathe, relax, look around, and then make a call. So how many times do we have to do this where things are going wrong and we get over emotional with certain situations and we kind of, our priorities go out the window and we're not able to deal with situations effectively. For me, that example really highlighted how important things can be, but really the importance of breathing and stepping away for a second to reprioritize and relist what you need to be doing in those situations. You know, when I look at athletic training, I look at how many games do we have to cover? What games are important? Where do we need to send certain people? Like I said, I'm lucky enough that I have a staff that I can send out an athletic trainer. I can send out an intern to volleyball practice. I can send somebody. We always have somebody out at football practice. You know, if there's something else going on in the aux gym or if we have rehabs going on over the place. But then we have a game outside too. Where do we need to be and prioritize? You know, that's been one of the things that helped me. And I, you know, it's as simple as setting a calendar and saying at 10:45 today, I need to go and be out at certain practice, or I need to be dealing with this situation. I can only spend so much time doing rehab with this person. But then I have to, you know, in true fashion, everything else is going to go to hell. And then what do I do when things do go to hell? Where do my priorities fall? I may be dealing with a rehab situation, but then somebody comes in with a bloody nose. That now becomes my priority, and then I have to deal with that priority and then, you know, work away from other things. So, you know, they talk about in the book going through different scenarios and training and constantly putting themselves in scenarios or in situations where they could potentially fail, but through their training, they learn how to deal with the priorities that as they come up. And that's one of the things that we have to do as athletic trainers is constantly go through different scenarios, whether it's continuing education, whether it's in the fall doing spine boarding with your staff, or you know, really going through your med kit and saying, okay, I've lost something. I need to re-put it back in there. But you're constantly going through and going through different scenarios that you potentially could fail at, but that has to be a priority in how you're going to operate, you know, through the day or through the week, when it comes to scheduling, when it comes to dealing with injuries, certain things like that. You know, that was for me, this part, this chapter really helped me kind of realign myself and find out what's important in my day-to-day situations in athletic training. So was there anything, did you get a chance to read that and look through those?
I did. I mean, like I said, I've listened to the whole thing twice and read through the book and the principles, but I don't think that there's anything else that I need to add. Again, it is about, just like you said, setting the priorities, but it can't come just at that moment. It has to be something you've prepared, something, okay, student number one, you can take care of that. You know, my seventh period students, they know how to go over there, fill up coolers, set those up, because they can't evaluate in rehab. And so I prioritize, these are the events, these are the things that only I can do. Somebody else can do this. It's just like, you know, you're going to talk about leading up and down the chain. This is my family time on Saturday, because there's no game scheduled, and I'm going to prioritize that and execute. And this is why, coach, that you scheduled that JVC team soccer game at a home campus the day before, or you scheduled it 6 months ago but didn't tell me. Mm-hmm. Well, that's your fault. And here's what's going to happen, because I'm prioritizing my family time. I'm prioritizing my relationship with my family, or the 5K or whatever it is that I'm going to run. You didn't prioritize my time, so I'm prioritizing it for me. And really, that's what it comes down to. So.
Yeah, and that goes back to taking ownership overall. You know, like, hey, you don't always have to have an excuse why you're not going to be there, right? Like, who cares if, of course, my dog started barking. You know, who cares if you have literally nothing planned on a Saturday? Like, that's fine. Like, do it. You know, don't do anything on Saturday. But that's your priority, because you've earned that. You've been at the school 6 days out of that week, you know, 5 days, and you've had really long days, and then all of a sudden things want to get dropped on you. Well, hey, listen, I need time for myself. Like, I need time to binge watch Netflix. I need time to read. I need time to literally not do anything, because I've had a hell of a week, and you need to be able to explain those things. And that's part of taking ownership too. You don't always have to say, I'm going to be extreme ownership and I'm going to take over and I'm going to work this game because they told me last second. And if I don't, and you know, whatever, you know, you have to find the balance in this too. You know, for me, the other part in the book, which I thought really helped my profession. One second.
Let's go, John. You got to own the situation, John.
Yes.
Real life example.
So one of the things that I found in my, maybe not profession, but in my experience at my school, was learning how to lead up and down the chain. And we've always, I think, doesn't matter if you're in a leadership position or if you're, you know, in a certain area where you don't have a leadership title, you can always lead down the chain. It's always easy to tell people what you expect of them or what to do. That's always an easy thing to do. I think one of the things that's really hard for athletic trainers to do is to lead up the chain of command. How many times do we kind of hit on this a lot today. How many times are we upset about games being scheduled at the last minute? How many times are we upset with our ADs or our principals? But we don't necessarily take ownership of the situation and tell them why. What is important to us and why do we need things to change, right? You know, I think this part of the chapter, so this chapter's almost a two-part chapter. It talks about leading up the chain, and then it talks about leading down the chain. And I think both parts are great, but for me, it was learning how to really speak up for myself and say, hey, things need to change, because if not, I'm not going to be an effective person at this position, or I'm not going to be who I want to be and reach my personal goals of being a good athletic trainer, being somebody who's reliable to my friends and family, because I'm not voicing those things. And the book does a really good job of, you want to be a part of something probably bigger than yourself, but then you have to let the people who are above you understand why you want to be a part of that. Those people understanding what's important to you, they start responding to you a little bit more and helping you out a little bit more. It's really, really easy to be frustrated with the people that you work for or work under. The hard thing is to tell them why you're frustrated and to learn how to do that. I think after I read this book, things had started clicking in my head a little bit more. And I was, at that time, I was frustrated as hell with my AD because he wasn't sending me schedules, or he wasn't telling me schedule changes, or he wasn't unlocking a bathroom. Like, those things would fire me up and I'd be so mad, but then I wouldn't say anything to him. I would just internalize it, right? But I didn't take ownership over the situation because I would just get pissy. And I kind of talk behind his back and be like, yeah, he's lazy here. You know, he's not doing something. But that's not helping the team. It's not helping what we want to do as a department. So I had to say something, and I had to be like, hey, man, this is important to me for you to do this or for me to do this. And the more you do that, and you have to have tact with it too. You can't just blurt, burst into an office and say, you need to do this, you need to do that. Like, that's not going to go over well at all. You have to have tact, and you have to have that conversation and really show why it's important to you that things probably need to change a little bit, and what the goal is behind it. Why do you want those things to change? I'm trying to look.
If I may, real quick, I see you looking down. John and I had this conversation as our test call just the other day, and it literally was supposed to be like a 5-10 minute test call thing, and I think we were on the thing for like 30 plus minutes, just because we're like already sharing stories and talking, we're excited. And just, I shared on Facebook the rodeo field trip I went to, and that was awesome. And so there was a couple things there. I've tried to take field trips before, but my principal was like, I need more information, and you need to write this up better, And I'm like, all you need to know is where and when. That's, but in the book it talks about he wants to approve it. He just needs to know the details so that he can send it up the next level. And then, it's proven to me from this last field trip. So we were there, and he's there also watching the kids that are doing the rodeo thing, right? Because it's the Bastion Livestock Show and Rodeo. But he takes time away from there, comes over, takes some pictures of and with us. And then when I take my kids inside the trailer, he brings in the Bastion Livestock Show and Rodeo communications people. And then he brings in the district communications people. And then he brings in one of the other assistant principals that came there as well. And so he wants to support and promote what I'm doing. And I can sit back and look like, why does he need all this extra information? Why is he questioning me? Why can't he just let me do my thing? Or I can give him the information he needs so that he can do an even better job of promoting me and saying, look, Jeremy, I really support you, and this is what I want to do. And that's just one example, because when he first came here, I felt like he didn't support me at all. But again, it's because I didn't make an effort to get to know him or tell him who I was or what I did. And the same thing when I talked with one of our school board members. He specifically said, Fred Roberts, there's an interview. If you go back on sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, search Fred Roberts, that interview with the school board member, he specifically said, the reason that we don't know who you are and what you do is because you don't tell us.
Yeah.
And if I don't tell them why my weekend's important, why it's important for you to send me the schedule, coach, or why I want to take the kids on the field trip, or why I need to buy this new piece of equipment, why it's important to me, not because you need to get it for me, but why it's important to me, I feel this is important to me because I feel valued whenever you send me the schedules 2 weeks ahead of time. I feel like I'm not valued when you send it before this. I feel like I'm not important, like I'm not part of the team. See, those are the things that it's not. You got to kind of, like you just said, step back, look at the situation, read up and down, make sure that the people above you know the situation. So, John's dogs are going crazy. I'm not sure if you can hear it in the audio, but I can hear it, and I can see John reaching over. I think he's playing like tug of war with his dog at the same time. Hopefully we got a little guest appearance. But so I love this concept. And again, like you said, there's so much tact involved. And one of the biggest things I think you can do is use I feel statements. So with my wife, I feel like you don't value my work when you don't take care of the dishes, or when you leave the living room a mess, or I feel like I'm not important when you sit there playing Candy Crush rather than, you know, hanging out with me or talking to me, or I feel valued when you do this, those kind of things. And then it's about me and not an attack on you. And they clearly right. cover this in the book too. But all right, John, go ahead.
No, you know, I think how many times do we get frustrated when somebody questions us? Right. Like you had just stated, why do they keep asking questions? Shouldn't they know? Shouldn't they know who we are? No. Like how many, it's 2018 and we still have to explain what athletic training is. And there's times, and I fall victim to this, where I get frustrated. Like it happened to me last night, and I'm upset with myself because I had a parent ask, well, you're just a trainer. Like, why are you doing that? And then like, I got frustrated because I'm like, oh, that, you know, hit my ego. And I said, all right, calm down, relax. I am an athletic trainer. I'm a medical professional. And this is what we do, you know, like, and I think he just had a misunderstanding of the semantics of our profession. He probably thought I was a personal trainer who had, you know, reduced a dislocation and was wondering why the hell is a personal trainer doing that? And it's no, you know, I had to explain to him. And it's tough because it takes a big shot to your ego. And I think everybody has an ego. It doesn't matter who you are. Everybody has an ego. And when you're able to like walk away from that ego for a second and explain to the person, you know, what it is you're trying to do, that's really what leading up the chain is explaining more and more. And you had talked about the permission slips for the field trip. And you're like, well, why do they want that? Well, they just want more information a lot of times. And what you're doing is when you lead up the chain of command, you're automatically deconflicting any conflicts because you're giving more information. The thing that I've always found is that people, when you have conflicts, is because there's a miscommunication or there's a misunderstanding. So the more you can communicate, the more you can add on, the less those situations arrive and the better you're able to work together. You know, this happened to me last year where a coach was he was yelling at me about something, and I literally had to say, I don't understand where you're coming from. I really want to understand why you're upset so that we can work together. And it was easy because I wasn't the one upset at that moment. You know, like he was upset about something, and I had to deconflict it. But really, once he told me, I said, oh yeah, okay, great. Like, we're going to work together about this. You know, and that's a situation where he had to lead up the chain really to me. And there's other times where, you know, I have to have a conversation with my boss about what's going on or what's a priority for us. And he may question it. And almost never it's a question of who you are. It's just they want more information. So being comfortable with it, having tact, giving that information over, give too much information, you know, and that could be a good thing. Because if you don't, you know, you have to realize that most of the time it's your ego that's going to make you upset. Let that go. Give the information, and things tend to work out as a team much, much better. So that was one of the things that I really liked about that chapter. It gave me the power to actually go up to my boss and say, this is what's important to me. I want to be here as part of this team. And then, you know, we had to have a negotiation about my contract, and things worked out well because they weren't realizing the things that I was doing outside of my job. They didn't realize the importance of certain things that I was doing. So once they realized that, it literally paid dividends for me. I mean, it helped with my contract. It helped me feel more comfortable. And then it made people in my district more aware of who I am. Like you had stated, your school board member. We have an amazing school board member that comes to every single home event. And now he knows who I am, which that's going to help. If ever I need something, like I know I can go talk to Paul and say, hey, Paul, you know, this is something I'd love to do for our school. What can we do to help this, or what can we, you know, do? And that's, you know, they have that information, who I am and what we do, and they're going to jump at the situation, or they're going to jump at the opportunity to help our student athletes, because that's really the common goal at the end of the day. So, you know, I think I'm going to, it's probably a good place to stop with the book. And
yeah, dude, we could end up going on like forever, just giving examples, like, or talking about other things. But yeah, that's probably a good round spot to finish there.
You know, I want to close today with a quote. And we've touched on a lot of things in this book. And I read the book, The Book of Five Rings by Miyamoto Musashi. Who, if anybody is a Jocko fan, they know the importance of the book Musashi, but it's a real person. And this is one of the things that I read a while back, and I loved it. There is nothing outside of yourself that can ever be, that can ever enable you to be better, stronger, richer, or smarter. Everything is within. Everything exists within you. And the reason I wanted to touch on that quote was, even though this book gives you principles, even though this book gives you examples and applications, if you don't want to be a better leader, you can't be a better leader. These things have to come from within you to be a better person, to be a better practitioner, to be a better person overall, and be a great leader in our profession. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast, and I was happy that you asked us. I don't think we're necessarily going to make the next president of the NATA, or somebody's not going to hear this podcast and say, that's it, I'm going to be the president of the United States. But if you're able to take a little bit more control in your day, you're going to take a little bit more ownership of your situation and your scenarios around you, you are going to be a better athletic trainer overall. And that is my goal for this podcast series and helping people work their way through those things.
If I have one action step from here, it is that, is take action. Take one of these things, just one, and work on it. And if I may recommend getting the book on Audible, again, you can either sign up for the year-long thing or the monthly thing. It's like $14 a month. Or you can find like a Groupon and get like a year for $100. So you get like a couple extra bonus credits. But I highly recommend the audiobook, because you get to hear it. You hear their voice, the excitement, unless you just really can't stand audiobooks. But I highly recommend it, and it makes it easier for me to understand. And so just take chapter one and go with chapter one, extreme ownership. Understand what it is, what it looks like in your life. Maybe write it out, take notes like John did. Scribble all over the book, or scribble all over a notebook. Chapter one.
I'm gonna show people right now, if they're watching, this is not just for the podcast. Like, if you can tell, all the notes and stickies, that's just typically what my book looks like. That's before I even started to write down notes in here for the podcast. So that's how important and how impactful this book has been for me.
Exactly. So don't get overwhelmed by all of it. Take one step. Just take one step. Start with chapter one. Look at what it looks like in your life, and then go from there. Again, just one step. If you take just one step today, and I know that it's one of those little social media things where the Admiral, I think it was talking to one of the universities, if you make your bed in the morning, you've accomplished that one thing. Or Jocko always talks about, if you turn that alarm off at 4:30 or whatever time you set your alarm for, then you are mentally weak and you have lost that first battle of the day, right? So if you win that just one battle of taking step one of owning everything, then you're already better than you were yesterday. You're already moving forward. There's going to be times where you fail and you don't own the situation. You still blame people, but it's about the next day, the next time. So, John?
So we're going to close every podcast of this series with a closing gratitude. I think if you can show some gratitude, it creates a little bit more humility and helps you be a better leader. So Jeremy, you're up. Is there anything that anybody you'd like to thank, or?
Yeah, I forgot to mention this episode is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/extreme ownership. So you can find show notes, you can find links. I've got a link to the book that's actually kind of like an affiliate link. So if you click on that, order the book through there, then it benefits me somehow, probably like a penny or something. But you can check it out there. So I think it's October 10th is when this should be released. So one week from tomorrow. And so again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/extreme ownership. But if I'm going to go ahead and distill two. One is my wife. Again, just even this morning, she just texted me and say, hey, I love you. Do well today. And really, I am super grateful that she chose me to be hers, right? And so she's such an encouragement and an amazing woman. And I'm always thankful to Sarah. And I don't know if I say that enough publicly. I know that I tell her often, but I just want to make sure I say that publicly. And then also, John, this is your series, right? I said, hey, what would you be willing to do this? And you said, I would love to. So I sent you the microphone, and then that's all I had to do, right? And so you've gotten all these guests lined up. You've gotten all these notes. You've encouraged me to grow, because this is the most homework I've ever done for a podcast. And it's probably been the most rewarding. Like I said, I have all these conversations. This is episode, who knows, 500. I've had these conversations. I've probably gone over all these principles before, as we've talked about with other leaders. But it's the processing, the personal need or desire to grow, and it just hit me at the right time. So understand that I really appreciate all that you're doing here to grow leadership and athletic training. So John, thank you.
I thank you very much, Jeremy, for asking me to be on it as well. I'm going to thank my friends and family who have kept me accountable. I put a lot of these principles in action in my life, and I want to thank those who have kept me accountable. My interns, the people I work with, my staff, for holding me accountable and to practice these principles on a day-to-day basis. I want to give a quick shout out to Ron, who is our station manager at WBFH. It's a radio station at the high school, who sat me down last night. And, I was nervous as hell, I think, going into this, but sat me down, helped me out a lot. So I really appreciate him and the people that I work with. And like I said, my friends and family. So we're going to do this every single episode. We're going to give a good closing gratitude. I'm always going to try to leave it blank in our show notes so that I can think about it a little bit more. So Jeremy, once again, thank you for having me on here. And I want to thank everybody else for joining us, those who stuck with us this last hour, joining us on this Sports Medicine broadcast. We will actually be back tomorrow. We are going to be speaking with Kurt Andrews, who's the director of sports medicine for the Sporting Kansas City. I almost said Kansas City Wizards. They haven't been known as that for about 10 years now, probably more than that. But he's the director of sports medicine for Sporting Kansas City of the MLS. And I really look forward to talking to him. He's a younger guy, but he's been in a good leadership position for the last couple of years. And I'm really looking forward to seeing some of the traits and habits that he keeps and really continue this discussion tomorrow and through the rest of the month. So thank you. And thank everybody for joining us.
So before we actually finish off, there are people who are watching live. We had several people on Facebook Live. And I know Owen Eisminger, he's been on here before. He was making some comments on Facebook. And then Jason Porterfield, is that somebody you know?
Yeah.
Because he said, Jason. Doc, you're famous. So you got some fans watching you live on Facebook there. So and Jonathan Reedy gave us a thumbs up. And so again, thank you for listening live, checking it, even if you just popped in, popped out for a little bit, go back, listen to it. But really, it's really cool when we get those comments and questions. And I look forward to the continued conversation after this. So, John, are you going to do the typical sign-off that I do there?
No, I'll let you do it.
All right. So for John Seco, Jeremy Jackson, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/extremeownership, that is a wrap. Thanks.